Okay, good morning, everyone. Let's begin. So what I'd like to try to do this week is to spend another shiur on the Ma'ayonos, on the wellsprings. So if you remember again, what did we do last week? Purim. Good, Purim. Excellent, good. Purim we did last week, and before that, if you remember again, we spoke about the wellsprings, and in that particular shiur, we spoke about the idea that the wellsprings constantly flow. We spoke about the struggle of Yaakov Avinu, and just like the wellsprings have the ability to constantly flow, so too we have the ability to overcome struggle, to be overcome our challenges and be able to sing Shira as well. Good, I just gave you an hour Shira in 30 seconds. Fantastic. So now we're going to continue a little bit and focus on the Ma'ayonos from a different perspective. So again, just to reorient ourselves, take a look at number one. Ma'ayonos omrim, what do the wellsprings say? V'sharim kecholalim kol ma'ayonei bach. Literally, and singers as well as flute players, all my inwards are concerned with you. So literally, again, the Ma'ayonos are saying, quoting the Pasuk from Tehillim. Remember again, last time I mentioned the Medrash Tehillim, that the Medrash said, "Kishem sha be'er noveya mayim kadoshim b'chol shah," just like the spring brings forth water every moment, new water every moment. Kach Yisrael, omrim shira chadasha b'chol shah. So too, Klal Yisrael sings beautiful new song in every single moment. That's the basic message of the Ma'ayon. Just as I, the Ma'ayon, the wellspring of constantly flowing, so to you, Klal Yisrael, are constantly flowing. Again, according to the Medrash, constantly flowing with Shira, constantly flowing with song, constantly flowing with renewal. Okay, so I'd like to explore a little bit of a different approach, or a little bit of a different lesson that we can learn from the Ma'ayonos, but it requires for us to go on a little bit of a journey. Because when it comes to wells, we find something incredibly fascinating. If you take a look, we're going to go through now sources 2 through 5. We're going to do them relatively quickly. So if you notice again, when you go through Sefer Bereishis, so there is a constant mentioning of wells. From the time we come to Avram Avinu, number 2. V'ochiach Avram es Avimelech al odos be'er hamayim asher gazlu avdei Avimelech. So amazingly enough, Avram Avinu were introduced to attention of Avram Avinu to Avram Avinu and Avimelech. Avimelech was the king of the Plishtim, the Philistines. And Avram rebukes Avimelech regarding the wells that were stolen by Avram, dug them, and Avimelech's servants stole them. That's Avram Avinu, a mention of a well. The truth is, when we come to Yitzchak Avinu, so Yitzchak Avinu is an enigmatic figure in general, because the truth is we know very little about him. There's very, very few stories told about Yitzchak Avinu. We're told about the Akedah, of course, again, the binding of Isaac, but even the Akedah, even Akedah Yitzchak, the primary character in Akedah Yitzchak is not Yitzchak Avinu. The primary character in Akedah Yitzchak is Avraham, right? Meaning the willingness of Yitzchak to sacrifice himself, of course, is incredible, but that's not the essence of that story. The essence of that story is the willingness of a father to sacrifice his son. So we learn about the Akedah, and what else do we learn about Yitzchak Avinu? And the truth is, not that much if you think about it. We learn about the fact that he goes ahead, Eliezer goes to get him a wife, comes back with Rivka. We know the story with Yaakov and Esav, and then pretty much Yitzchak dies. The bulk of the story of Yitzchak Avinu centers around wells. If you take a look at number 3, so the pasuk says, the verses say, "Vayoshev Yitzchak the yachbar es beira samayim shecharfu bimei Avram aviv vayisatmum plishtim acharimos Avram vayikro lahem shemos kashemos shekar lam aviv." Aviv. This is amazing. What does the story tell us? Yitzchak dug wells. Do you want to know what Yitzchak Avinu? What's his claim to fame? He was a well digger. That's what he did. Which wells did he dig? He went ahead and he redug the wells that his father dug. Avram Avinu dug wells? Torah doesn't tell us. I mean, Torah tells us that Avram Avinu dug some wells. We don't know. Torah doesn't tell us the incredible number of wells that Avram Avinu dug. From Yitzchak, we know Avram dug a number of wells, which were apparently subsequently filled in by the Plishtim. Yitzchak redigs his father's wells, and he calls them by the same names that Avram had called them as well. Vayachperu avdi Yitzchak banacha vayintzu sham be'er mayim chayim. And again, the Torah tells us, Yitzchak Avinu's servants dig in the valley, and they find a live spring. Vayarivu ro'i graim ro'i Yitzchak le'imar, lanu ha'mayin v'ikir shim ha'ber esek, kis ashku imo, v'yachru ber acheras, v'yarivu gamala, v'yikra shmo sitno, v'yartek misham ber acheras, v'lo ravu ala v'yikra shmo rechovos, ki v'yomer ki ato hirchi v'ashem lanu ufarina ba'ar. So amazingly enough, the greatest amount of detail in Yitzchak Avinu's life is given to wells. Yitzchak digs his own wells, new wells. As you see over here, we have Esek, Sitna, Rechovos, and Yitzchak Avinu goes ahead and redigs the wells that his father dug that were filled in by the Philistines. We come now to number 4. Vayiba Yomahu, Vayavo Avdi Yitzchak Vyagidolo Al Odos Haber Asher Chafru, Vayomru Lo Matsanu Mayim. The servants come running to Yitzchak Avinu. They say, wonderful news, we found water. Vayikra oso shiva, alkein shem ha'ir Be'er Sheva ad hayom hazeh. The city of Be'er Sheva, named for the well that was found there, dug there, ultimately found by Yitzchak Avinu. So just as an aside, there's an interesting idea on Yitzchak Avinu. Why is it that the Torah, if you think about Yitzchak Avinu, the only thing really that we know about Yitzchak is that he was born, okay, that we know Mazel Tov, Akedah, digging of the wells, the episode of the birthright with Yaakov and Esav, marries Rivka, episode of the birthright, and he dies. That's all. If you think about that for a moment and you contrast that with the lives of Avraham and Yaakov, there's a stark contrast. Torah tells us all about the exploits of Avram. Torah tells us all about the exploits of Yaakov. But with Yitzchak Avinu, there is this very limited and narrow focus. Why? So the simple answer is, because Yitzchak wasn't a Yaakov and Yitzchak wasn't an Avram. Yitzchak Avinu, Rav Shem Shlomo Hirsch, has a beautiful idea where he explains that Yitzchak Avinu was a bridge. He was a bridge generation. It was not his job to innovate. It was not his destiny to innovate. He was not his father who went out to the community of mankind to try to spread the word of monotheism. He was not his son who would be the father of children in diaspora, solidifying an Abrahamic family in incredibly alien atmosphere and territory. That wasn't Yitzchak. What was Yitzchak's job? You know, in the business world, they say that if you grow too quickly, you are at risk for collapse. Meaning you have to grow with Chachma. Avraham Avinu created an incredible spiritual empire, an incredible spiritual initiative. Yitzchak Avinu's job was to shore up the enterprise in order that Yaakov could build upon it. Avinu created a foundation. Yitzchak solidified that foundation, so Yaakov Avinu was able to build upon it. So what is Yitzchak Avinu? That's why, what does the Torah tell us? The Torah tells us about the things that Yitzchak Avinu did that mirrored his father's accomplishments. Yitzchak does not have independent accomplishments. Yitzchak Avinu does not blaze new trails like his father. That's not a shortcoming in Yitzchak. That's Yitzchak's obligation. That's Yitzchak's sacred duty. And this is incredibly important because sometimes we think that the hallmark of accomplishment is doing something new, right? What's an accomplishment? I'm going to do something no one ever did before. Great. Fantastic. Who says that's your mission in life? There are people who are supposed to blaze new trails. There are people who are supposed to do things that no one before them has done. But for many of us, the greatest accomplishment is being another link in the Masorah, is ultimately adding on another layer of mortar, right, on the bricks of the foundation of our family, of Klal Yisrael, ensuring that someone who comes after us are able to build upon that which we have created. Klal Yisrael needs both kinds of people. This in general is a different discussion. How amazing, you see, okay, just for a moment. We live in a time now, I mean in the Jewish community, where we often think that the goal is to make everyone the same, right? Every boy is supposed to sit and learn, and every girl is supposed to marry the best boy in Lakewood, right? And every mishpacha is supposed to do this, and every... It's so foolish. It's so foolish for one simple reason. If that was true, then the avos and the mos would have all been the same. Isn't it amazing that every single patriarch, every single av is different from the other? And every single one of the matriarchs, dramatically different. You know, we say, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah were four dramatically dynamic, different personalities. Did you think that just because when Rivka came back into the tent of Sarah, that the miracles came back, that she was the same as Sarah? She was not the same as Sarah. Remember again, they were very similar. But you know, Rivka Imenu kind of orchestrated this whole thing behind her husband's back to get her younger sons, the sons of Rachel. Now, that's a different discussion as to what exactly is going on with that. But that is a take-charge woman who, if her husband is not going to see things the way they are, is going to do what has to be done to move the family along. No matter what the cost, no matter what the risk, the avos and the imos were dramatically different personalities. Somehow, someway, we have come to a point where we have become very intolerant of difference. I mean, we've created a box, and if you're in the box, then fine. But if you're out of the box, then you're off the derech. If you're out of the box, then there's something wrong with you. If you're out of the box, then what's going on? What's the issue you have? And we do ourselves a disservice. We do our communities a disservice. We do our people a disservice. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not want Yitzchak to be Avraham 2.0. That's not what he wanted. He wanted Yitzchak to be a Yitzchak. But Yitzchak, look at your father. He was running down to Egypt. He's running to Gerar. He's running here. He's running there. Where are you going? The answer is nowhere. He stays in Canaan. Why? Because that was his job. Because his job was not to run around influencing humanity. That was Avram Avinu's job. That becomes Yaakov's job. Or more appropriately, that becomes Yaakov's children's job. Yitzchak, stay in Canaan and solidify the foundation. Stay in Canaan, because remember again, imagine, had Yitzchak Avinu not solidified the foundation, Yitzchak Avinu did not realize it, but he was going to have a son, Yaakov, who was going to have to spend a very long time outside of the spiritual protection of Canaan. The only way Yaakov Avinu was able to survive was because he grew up in the solidified home of a Yitzchak and a Rivka. If Yitzchak Avinu was running all around, right, influencing humanity ultimately like his father, then what would have been with Yaakov? Everyone has a different tachlis, and everyone has a different purpose, and everyone has a different avoda. And no one's, if I were to ask you, so who's the greatest of the avos? So Chazal tell us that Yaakov Avinu is the Bechir Sheba Avos, right? He was the best because, again, Mitaso Shlema, all of his children perpetuated his legacy. But the truth is that question in and of itself is a little bit flawed because Klal Yisrael could not exist without any of them. And it's an incredibly important metaphor for the way we have to look at Jewish community also. There is no such thing as any one segment or any one group. And by the way, I believe this to be true not just within the Orthodox community. You know, there's a whole bunch of other Jewish people out there also. Right? This is true for all of Klal Yisrael. The Jewish people exist only because there are multiple streams with everybody doing their own thing in their own way. And everyone somehow, in some way, serves an indispensable purpose. Just because you can't see it doesn't mean that it's not there. This is really on my mind because I'm just coming back from the APAC conference. And it's amazing to see, you know, it's a relatively new phenomenon that the Orthodox community is involved in APAC. You know, but understand that you're talking about an organization that is very heavily influenced by other streams of Judaism, and they provide for hundreds of millions of dollars of aid for the state of Israel. It is an unfathomable thing. You know, we think that often it's only the Jews who are learning and rooted in Torah who make a difference ultimately for the world and for Klal Yisrael. And I want to tell you, it's unequivocally false. Those who learn Torah absolutely absolutely provides something indispensable, but every Jew provides something. Every Jew contributes something. Every Jew contributes something to the panoramic landscape of Am Yisrael and to ultimately the continuity of the world. And it's incredibly important for us to internalize that. That's the Avos. Each one different in their own way. Each one contributing something unique in their own way. So that's Yitzchak Avinu. But again, back to the wells. So when it comes to Yitzchak Avinu, all we're told about are the wells. That's all we're told about are the wells. Skip down a little bit. Number 5. Vayisa Yaakov Raglov. Vayelech Artza Ben Ekedem. So once again, when we're first introduced to Yaakov Avinu, now remember, up until Yaakov Avinu runs away from Canaan, he's a young man. Right? He's a young man. He's not really making his mark, so to speak. He gets the bracha from Yaakov, from Yitzchak, excuse me, and then he has to flee from the house of from his familial home, and he has to run to Haran to Lavan. So what happens when he gets to Haran? Vayisa Yaakov raglav v'yelech artza b'nei kedem v'yar v'hinei be'er basode v'hinei sham shlosha edrei tzon rov tzimala kimina be'era hi yashku ha'adarim v'even gedola pia be'er. So we know this is the story with Yaakov Avinu by the well. This is a little bit different. The other ones, Avram and Yitzchak, are digging wells. What is Yaakov Avinu doing? Same dynamic, if you think about it. He's opening a well. In his case, he's not going ahead and digging the well. Rather, what is he doing? What is he doing? He's ultimately uncovering the well. So you see the Torah's preoccupation with wells. All about the wells. Now remember again, as we always say, so there's no such thing as a piece of extraneous or unnecessary information, a piece of information in the Torah. Everything is relevant and everything is meaningful. And if a Torah Kedosha is going through spending so much time speaking about those, again, I want to point out, Yitzchak has the greatest concentration of well information, for reasons we just mentioned before, but you see it by Avram, and you see it by Yaakov as well. To amplify the question a bit more, take a look at number 6. So this is from the Sefer Sifsei Tzadikim, written by Rav Mendel of Riminov. And the Rebbe writes as follows, he amplifies this. Number 6. Be Avram ne'emar v'yeshev Avram be'er sheva. Be Yitzchak ne'emar v'yimtzu sham be'er mayim. Be Yaakov ne'emar v'yar v'nei be'er basada. So fine. So writes the Rebbe, we see by Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov. Ultimately, again, we mention the well. Be Yosef ne'emar. Kishahaya batsara, vayashlicheyu oso habora, vahaborek engbomayim. So by Yosef, we also see a well in a different kind of context. When the brothers at first want to kill Yosef, decide not to kill him, but instead, what do? They throw him into a pit. And what does the Torah say? Vahaborek engbomayim. The pit, the well was empty. There was no water in there. B'moshe v'Aaron emar, be'er chafaru asarim. Torah makes mention of a well by Moshe and Aaron. Actually, this is a reference to Be'er Miriam. Right? This is a reference to the miraculous well that followed the Jewish people for 40 years in their sojourn in the desert. B'davin ne'emar, mi'ish akini mayim mi'be'er beis lechem. David HaMelech is referred by a well. So, again, what the Rebbe of Riminov is just pointing out is, it's interesting. The well seems to follow great people wherever they go. Right? Some people dig the well, some people drink from the well, but yet you see Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Yosef, Moshe, Aaron, David. And by the way, the list goes on. This reference or this connection to the Be'er, to the Ma'ayan, to the well. V'haynu, lefi shekulam hayu divukim be'er azos, lahamshich misham chasadim tov ma'ayzor. We'll leave that line for just a moment for now. But for now, what I want you to take away is something amazing, which is, there is no accident that somehow all of our great people, are connected to wells. So what's the pshat? What's the deeper meaning of the well? What's the deeper meaning? And again, we're going to use Be'er and Ma'ayan a little bit interchangeably. We'll translate them both as a well or as a wellspring. So what's the deeper message over here? Or better stated, what's the symbolism of the well? So all would be well. All right, then Meretz Hashem. In Meretz Hashem. Good. So I want to... Good. I want to share with you. I was going to say 3 approaches, now 4 approaches. Good. So I'll share with you 3 different, I think, approaches to the symbolism of the well. 2 well-known, 1 perhaps not as well-known. So the first is the Gemara number 7. The Gemara says, in general, when it comes to the well, what's important about the well is what? Is the water in the well, right? The well by itself is not the significant part. It's the water that's in the well which is significant. And writes the Gemara, Ve'ein mayim ela Torah. Ultimately, again, what does water represent? Water represents Torah. Where do we know this from? So the Gemara over here quotes the pasuk from Yeshayahu, which appears in number 8 on your sheet. Hoy kol tzamei luchu l'mayim. All who are thirsty, go to the water. So ultimately, the Gemara says that what's the water? What's the water? Ultimately, it's Torah. Now, this is actually an incredibly profound idea. Because with the Gemara, now, what does the Gemara say? What does Yeshayahu say? Whoever is thirsty, go for the water. See, everyone in life is thirsty for something, which means what? When you're thirsty, it means there's something lacking. It's, I thirst for something. There's something lacking in me. We've spoken about this before, that in life, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created each of us with a void. We all feel some type of emptiness inside of us. If you don't feel it, it's just because you're not thinking enough. Right? We all have an emptiness that's inside of us. The only shaila, the only question in life is, what do you choose to fill your emptiness with? So you see this a lot in life. So sometimes people try to fill the emptiness with stuff. Stuff. Materialism is probably the number one thing that most people try to fill their void with. And yet, what ends up happening? So we know, because we all go through this period in life where I think, I'll be happy if I have fill in the blank. Whatever the fill in the blank is, a house, a car, outfit, vacation, whatever it is. And then the truth is, we're zocha to get it, and it's nice, and it certainly brings some element of joy, right? But then you realize that what? The void is still there. The void is still there. And it's an incredible increase. So sometimes, again, erroneously, we say, oh, so you know, I made a mistake. It wasn't that thing. It's that thing that I need. And how tragic it is, people go through an entire lifetime like this, of purchasing, buying, and acquiring all different kinds of things, not because I'm an overly materialistic person, but because I'm looking for happiness. I'm looking to fill a void, and I think this thing will happen. And by the way, this is not just true with avoiding spirituality, right? If a person has an unhappy marriage, how many times do people make a choice to find happiness, right? If I have an unhappy marriage, I have a void. So how am I going to fill the void? So often there are two options. You can work on your marriage. That's really difficult. That's really difficult and exceptionally grueling. So I have a better idea. I'll go shopping. It's a lot easier, right? Because I was going to say cost less money, but it probably doesn't, right? And I'll fill the void like that. And what happens? So it's great because when I'm shopping or buying or acquiring or whatever else, it takes my mind off my problems. But about an hour later, I'm back to exactly where I was. We all have voids in life. And the most important thing is to figure out how to fill your void in the right way. People spend a lifetime filling their voids with all the wrong things, and they remain unhappy throughout life. So the Navi Yeshayahu says, "Hai kol tzamei." Everyone is thirsty in life. We're all thirsty. We all have a void. Ultimately, so says Yeshayahu, so what should you do? Lechu l'mayim. Go find the water. You want to feel complete in life? You want to feel fulfilled in life? Go towards Torah. Seek out spirituality. Seek out a relationship with God. That will fulfill you. That will make you feel whole. In fact, if you look at number 9, Rabbi Nachman writes so beautifully. He says, V'zeh. He actually explains, V'zeh ruach Elokim merachefes al pnei hamayim. He says, this is the deeper meaning of the first pasuk in Bereishis. The pasuk says, the spirit of God, or literally like the ruach of God, the wind of God, the spirit of God, was hovering over the water. What does that mean? This is so beautiful. Hainu, kishalomei Torah, when a person learns Torah. And by the way, when we speak about learning Torah, this is very important to understand. learning Torah does not just mean like what we're doing over here right now, about actively looking at a text and learning inside. Learning Torah means being steeped in spirituality. Involved in chesed is also learning Torah, right? Going out and davening is also learning Torah. Torah, we sometimes limit it in a very narrow focus to the act of learning. But a life of Torah means a life that is steeped in a relationship with God with all of its different avenues and facets. So says Rabbi something amazing. Haynu kishalomei Torah, when a person is involved in a life of Torah, kimayim zu Torah kiyadua, for as we know, water is Torah, or Torah is water. Azai v'ruach Elokim sheruach hakodesh merachetes v'chofif alav v'shoif rachem. So this is quite beautiful. Says Rabbi, this is the meaning of the opening phrase in Genesis. V'ruach Elokim merachetes al pnei amayim. When you drink of the waters of spirituality, you will feel the ruach Elokim hover over you. You want to fill your void? You want to feel tranquility in life? Drink of the waters of Torah. And when you imbibe in the waters of spirituality, v'ruach Elokim merachetes al pnei hamayim, you will feel the Spirit of God pass over you. And we know this to be true. When a person is steeped in a spiritual life, when a person is steeped in a life of holiness, again, we always speak about this idea. Closeness to God does not mean everything is going to go your way. Closeness to God does not mean everything is going to be hunky-dory. Closeness to God doesn't mean everything is going to fall into place as you want it, when you want it, how you want it. But what closeness to God does give you is a sense of tranquility, a sense of peace, a sense of fulfillment, a sense of wholeness. I know that when I drink of the waters of Torah, I am filling my void with that which is eternal. And when I fill my void with that which is eternal, the Ruach Elokim merachefes al pnei hamayim, I feel the Spirit of God hover over me. I know this sounds like a little bit heebie-jeebie, the Spirit of God hovering over me. But the truth is, If you drank the water, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Because at the end of the day, you know, how does the famous adage go? Right? For the atheist, there are no answers, and for the believer, there are no questions. I don't believe that. For the believer, there are questions. There are always questions. We should ask questions. But for the atheist, there's no tranquility. For the believer, there's incredible tranquility. That tranquility that you feel when you're close to God comes from the fact that you're filling the void with the waters of holiness. And when you fill your void with waters of holiness, you feel different, you are different, you live different, you behave differently. Everything about me in life is transformed when I choose to fill my void with the waters of Torah. And this is an incredible, I know I've mentioned this a number of times. I always find the most striking examples of this. I'm sure I must have said this 100 times in this shir, in different iterations. To me, you know what the most striking example of this is? Not something within the Jewish people. I think you often find this in the world, where you often find these actors and actresses or musicians who have everything, quote unquote, right? The fame, the money, the this, the that. And then amazingly enough, what do they turn to? Kabbalah. Right? Oh. So right, Madonna, or I think she's known as Esther now, whatever her name is, right? She's learning Kabbalah. Tom Cruise is like the Rav Harashi of the Church of Scientology. You know. So it's interesting. What's the pshat with that? Right, they have more money than they could spend in 10 lifetimes. Right, more fame than they could spend than they could accrue. Like, what is it? Because it's an amazing thing. People grow up and we think that there are certain things that are going to make me feel whole. And then there are some people who achieve all those things. Fame, fortune, success. And they're still young enough in their life to realize that, oh my gosh, I still feel empty. So it's an amazing thing. And sometimes, you know, you have to learn from general society as well. So if these people have all the things that sometimes we fantasize about, right? All that money, all that wealth, all that fame. Oh, if I had that, what I would do, what my life would be like. People have it and they still feel empty, which tells us that the keys to feeling fulfilled in life, whole in life, are right in front of us. Those waters of Torah, those waters of spirituality, those waters of Yiddishkeit, those waters of relationship with God are there for the drinking, right? They're right there. High cult sameh, l'chu l'mayim. If you're thirsty, which we all are, fill your void with the right kind of water. And I'll show you something amazing. If you take a look at number 10. So Rabbi Tzadok says something amazing. He quotes over here, again, this same idea, mayim zu Torah. So remember again, one of the episodes, one of the people that the Sif Sei Tzadikim brought up was Yosef. Remember, Yosef was different because whereas everyone else is digging or uncovering wells, what happens with Yosef in the well? He's thrown into the well, right? So the pasuk says, "V'habarek in bo mayim." That's by Yosef. The well was empty. There was no water in it. So if you remember again, I didn't put it on the sheet, but Rashi says something amazing. V'habarek in bo mayim. The well was empty. There was no water. So Rashi says, mayim in bo. There was no water. Avam nechoshim v'akravim yeshbo. But there were snakes and scorpions in it. So the question that everyone asks in that Rashi is, how do you know? Maybe the Torah is just saying that there was no water in the well. So Rashi's logic, remember, Rashi is a reactive mefarish, which means that when Rashi comments, he sees something in the verse that bothers him and he comments on it. So Rashi's asking the following question. Why does the Torah have to spell out that there was no water in the well? Who cares? Who cares? Obviously, the Torah is telling us there was no water, but there was something else. What else could there be in a well that would be of significance? So Rashi understands snakes and scorpions to highlight the idea that Yosef was actively plunged into peril. But if you look at Rabbi Tzadok, he says something amazing. He says, "D'chol nisayon shehu levar atzmiusahu kasher ya'alimu menu divrei Torah, hamatzilim mechit, rak shu belibo ba'atzmo ya'aseh kirtzono, v'zeh hanisayon levar mashu." Let me read one more line. "V'eshlicheu lebarek midivrei Torah." So the Rebbe says, Tzadok Kohen of Lublin says something amazing. V'habar reik. You see, I want to tell you something absolutely amazing. What's the word tara? Tara mean? Tara. Purity. Tuma? Impurity. So I want to tell you, this is an incredible misnomer. Right now, because we assume that Tumah and Tara are opposites, so if Tara is purity, then Tumah really must be impurity. Impurity. So I'll tell you why this is a little, it's not really what Tumah means. Tumah doesn't mean impurity. Tumah means the absence of purity. Where there is no Tara, there is Tumah. Or better stated, Tumah, really the definition of Tumah, is a lack of purity. There's a lack of holiness that is there. By the way, on a very simple level, you know where this is most paramount? This is most paramount in Hilchos Nida. So why is it that after a woman becomes, she's tamei? She's impure? No, because before a woman becomes a Nida, she has the capacity or ability to provide life, which is the highest level of Tara. The highest level of purity. When that ability or opportunity is removed for that particular month, there is an absence of that purity. The absence of that purity, that void, is called tumah. Doesn't mean that a woman is unclean, that a woman is impure. Chas v'shalom just means that for that period of time, she had a capacity to give life. Now that capacity is gone. And therefore, the absence of that ability to fulfill the highest level of Tara is now called Tumah. This is incredibly important. Why says Rabbi Tzadok? Because watch this. What happened with Yosef? V'habarek ein bo mayim. So Rashi tells us there was no water in there. So what was there? There were snakes and scorpions. Says Rabbi Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin, such an incredible lesson. The bar represents the receptacle of us. The bar is my void. Right? Each of us has a bar. We each have that pit inside of us. And what did we just say? What's our job? What's our job? To fill up the bar with what? With water. With Torah. Ma'im of Torah. Says the Rebbe something so amazing. Understand. If you don't fill up your bar with the right things, other stuff moves in. If you don't fill up the bar with mayim, with water, with holiness, with spirituality, nechashim va'akravim yeshba. This is an incredibly important idea. The only place that pariv status exists in life is in your kitchen. In life, you're either milchiks or you're fleshiks. There's either water or there's snakes and scorpions. My bar is occupied by forces at all times. I make a conscious decision. Do I want to fill my bar? Do I want to fill my emptiness? Do I want to fill my void with holiness, with purity, with Torah? If I do so, great. If I don't do it, understand, other forces come in there. Right? The Nechashim Vakra, look at Rabbi Tzadok says, Vishlichu, last two lines, Vishlichu lebar reik midivrei Torah. They threw him into a pit that was empty of water, of Torah. Aval nechashim va'akravim hamasisim l'chol minei ra, shezeu shoresh hanachash, yesh sham ubazen esparash meruchak meirav b'shorasho. This is incredible. Says Rabbi Tzadok, this is the lesson of the bar. V'habar reikin bo mayim. So what does Rashi say? If there's no mayim, if there's no holiness, if there's no goodness, if there's no purity inside of your bar, the bar is never empty. Either it's going to be filled with the water of Torah and holiness, or it's going to be filled with the snakes and scorpions of negativity and unholiness. Those are the two states of my bar. So according to this first approach, so the concept or the metaphor of the bar, of the pit, of the well or of the wellspring is Torah. So why is it ultimately again that we have the well connected to Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Yosef, Moshe Aaron, David? Because you know what the mark of great people? The mark of great people is they're always filling up their wells. They're always filling up their wells. Because if you don't actively replenish your well every single day with the mayim of spirituality, with the water of spirituality, other stuff is going to come in and occupy that space. The well teaches us, that you have to drink of the waters of spirituality. You have to fill your life with the waters of spirituality. And failure to do so doesn't keep you in a pariv state. Unfortunately, again, if the bar is reik and ein bo mayim, if the well is empty and there's no water in there, there's no spirituality in there, unfortunately, nechashim va'akravim yeshbo. The snakes and scorpions of negative behaviors, the snakes and scorpions of negative lifestyles, the snakes and scorpions of unholiness will settle in that bar. But there's a second symbolism to the pit, to the well and to the wellspring. If you take a look at number 11, so they told us Yaakov Yosef, Hosev Yaakov Yosef of Ponoi, Talmud Mufak, primary disciple of the Baal Shem Tov, says something absolutely amazing. He quotes over the pasuk from Tehillim, Ha'ofchi hatsur agam mayim. When one of the praises that we give to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we recite this in Hallel, and we say, who transforms the rock into a pond of water. What does that mean? Says it to Yaakov Yosef, Shenechlelu hagevuros pechasodim, shesham agam mayim, chesed v'havein. So first of all, the Rebbe says something amazing. He says, water represents chesed. Water represents kindness. Human kindness. See, you understand just an interesting and beautiful insight into the pasuk. Ha'ofchi hatsur agam mayim. What does it mean that God turns the rock into water? A rock represents strict justice. The rock represents, again, din. So says there is something amazing. Ha'ofchi hatsur agam mayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu transforms din, strict justice, into water, into chesed. That even when HaKadosh Baruch Hu deals harshly with us, even when HaKadosh Baruch Hu deals with us with the Midas HaDin, the strict attribute of justice, there's always an underlying chesed. There's always an underlying kindness, everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does. But in this context, what I want to isolate for you is that water, mayim, represents chesed, represents kindness. Why does water represent kindness? So that's obvious as well. Just as water nourishes and sustains, so human kindness, chesed, nourishes and sustains as well. Olam chesed yibana. The world is built on chesed. We cannot exist as a community, but not only just the community, I mean the community of mankind, cannot exist without human kindness. Well, just like you can't live without water, you cannot live without chesed. And I want to tell you there's two meanings to that. You cannot live without the chesed that others do for you, but also, and just as important, you cannot live without doing chesed for others. A person who goes through their day without doing a chesed for another human being is deficient in the way that they're living. I don't just mean deficient like in your midos. I mean there's something missing from my life. When you're able to do for others, when you're able to give to others, in small ways and in big ways, it doesn't have to be anything magnanimous. When you're able to go ahead and give something to other people, even in the smallest of ways, you make a dramatic difference in the quality of your own life. So we have, therefore, two interpretations as to ultimately, again, what, and by the way, according to this, why is the well, right? Why is Mayim, the Be'er Mayim, why is the well linked to all these great people? For an incredible lesson. Lest you think that great people only become great because they wholly and solely and totally devote themselves to Bein Adam Lamakom, to their relationship with God, but they leave the chesed to someone else? No. Avram was by the well, Yitzchak was by the well, Yaakov was by the well, Yosef was by the well, Aaron, Moshe, David, everyone is by the well. Because if you want to be great in life, your relationship with God is only one part of that equation. The other part, which is as equally as important as the first, is your relationship with your fellow man. Are you a Baal Chesed or a Baal As Chesed? Are you someone ultimately, again, who is able to give and to be there for others? Are you someone ultimately who is able to take of your waters and to share with someone else? So now we begin to see again the symbolism of the well and how it's related to all of our great people. Either the well symbolizing Torah, and in that metaphor, the empty well represents the void that we have inside of us. And the question we have to make, and by the way, we make this decision every single day. You know, the truth is, every single thing you do in life fills your well. And you have to ask yourself, is this what I want to fill my well with? You know, sometimes it's so much easier not to be a deep thinker in life and just go through life. It's so much easier, so much, you know, but that's not the luxury we have. You have to think about this. Every single thing you do throughout your day fills your well. Do I want to fill my well with this stuff or not? Do I want to be angry? Do I want to hold grudges? Do I want to be nasty? Right? Do I want to get wrapped up in materialism? Do I want to this? Do I want to... It's your decisions to make. Just understand, whatever you do and whatever you choose drops something in your well. The Navi tells us, Haikol tzame luchu l'mayim. Fill your well with water of spirituality. Because anything else you fill your well with ultimately, again, will not make you feel fulfilled and will leave you still feeling empty and with that incredibly vacuous void. Number two, if you don't fill your void with the right things, negativity will fill it on its own. The well never remains empty. You have to make the active decision as to what you fill it with. The greatness of the people mentioned, the Avos, plus Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Yosef, Aaron, Moshe, David, everyone else, they were always people who were actively trying to fill their wells with the water of spirituality. Lesson number two is water represents chesed. If you want to be a well-rounded Jew, and again, this goes both ways, it is not just enough to have a good relationship with God. You must work on your relationship with your fellow human being as well. We have to become Baal Chesed. And by the way, I want to point out, people often think that Baal Chesed means like the people, you know, far away. Like, I'm going to be a Baal Chesed, I'm going to go to the hospital to do something for someone. By the way, you know, you could do Chesed for people who live in your house. Right? That's also, I remember, you know, when we took the group here from Baltimore to go to Seagate, you know, to clean up from, what was that hurricane? Sandy, right? So we went, and Mamish, everybody's clearing out. So I remember I came home. My wife said, great, you're going to clean out our basement now, right? Also, right? You know, and it was an incredible musr, because I thought, like, wow, like, to get on a bus and go clean out someone else's basement, that's like, that's chesed. I was supposed to clean out my basement, like, for 6 months before that, and somehow, like, I got tired after 5 minutes. It's an incredibly important idea. Chesed doesn't require you to join an organization. And chesed doesn't require you to go and find someone somewhere else. Be nice to people. Be nice to people. When you don't triple park, when you carpool, that's chesed. That's chesed. Pull over. No one has to wait for you to pick up your carpool. That's being a considerate balas chesed. When you say hello to people and you nod to them wherever you are throughout your day, that's being a bal chesed. When someone in your life is having a difficult time and you just pick up the phone and say, listen, I can't help you. I can't solve your problem. Just want to let you know that I'm thinking about you. That's, we sometimes have these grandiose visions of like what chesed means, right? Chesed means that I'm going to go visit the terminally ill and I'm going to do this. That's beautiful. That's incredible. That's wonderful. But not everybody has time to do that on a daily basis. But I have to do chesed on a daily basis. There are multiple opportunities right in front of us. The greatness of our avos, of Aaron and Moshe, of Yosef, of David, was that not only were they constantly growing in their relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but they are growing in their relationship ultimately with their fellow man as well. Which now leads us to our last approach, where this will conclude. Take a look at number 13. So this is from the Lubavitcher Rebbe in his Likutei Sichos, and he says something so beautiful. Now, the Rebbe over here, just to give you the context, the Rebbe over here is focused on Yitzchak Avinu. He's specifically dealing with why the Torah only tells us about the wells of Yitzchak and doesn't give us any additional information about Yitzchak. Meaning, the Rebbe almost feels like Yitzchak must have done other stuff. There must have been other accomplishments. I'm sure there were. Torah is not a storybook. Torah only tells, just like Avraham Avinu had more accomplishments than what's stated in the Torah. And Sarah Imenu had more accomplishments stated in the Torah. Torah is not a storybook. Torah tells us the information we need in order to be able to learn our moral ethical lessons. So says the Rebbe, why does the Torah only go out of its way to tell us about Yitzchak's well digging? And again, then he expounds the question, like we've been speaking about up until now, why is the digging of wells seemingly a preoccupation of the avos throughout Chumash Bereishis? So the Rebbe says something amazing. Look in number 13. Avodaso she Yitzchok shezeu klalos in the right hand paragraph. Inyan avodami lamat lamat. Skip to the second paragraph there. I'm sorry, I didn't number it. Vezeu inyan maase avos simon labanim. Says the Rebbe, you know, all of Bereishis, the Ramban mentions this phrase of maase avos simon labanim. The entire book of Bereishis is a metaphor. It's a metaphoric foreshadow. What happened to our forefathers is the story of the Jewish people. What happened to them happens to us. What happened to them as individuals happens to us ultimately again as a nation. So the Rebbe says something amazing. Sha'avodaso shel Yitzchak bechafiras habeiros, because Yitzchak Avinu is digging of the wells. Mahave nesinas koach lechol echad ve'echad miyisrael. The fact that Yitzchak Avinu dug wells gives each of us the koach, the ability to do the same. Shelo yiton she'in biyachaloso lahagia la'ar neshama. A person should never say, I don't have the ability to get to the light of my soul. We'll translate then, we'll see what the Rebbe means. Ba b'shashi behelam v'hestem mitzat hislab shusa beguf v'nefesh habahamis. Because ultimately, again, my soul is obscured by too many layers. Too many layers. I have my animalistic and carnal wants and desires. Shemechasim umma'alimim al-ar neshama. And those layers obscure the light of my soul. So a person should never say, I can't discover my inner light, because there are so many layers of impurity that are resting upon it. Ki Yitzchak pasach v'salal kvar es ha'avoda shalastaras ha'elem v'hestra yidei chafira sabers. Because Yitzchak taught us how to dig wells. Va'al yidei zeh nasan lanu gamas ha'koach la'hasir es ha'alamos v'astam ala lukuso. And through that, he has taught us how to dig for our holiness as well. Says the Rebbe something absolutely magnificently amazing, which is, how do you dig a well? How do you dig? I'm not going to take a show of hands. Many people dig wells. How do you dig a well? It's on a very simple level, right? So what do you do? take a shovel, good, excellent, right? And you shovel away dirt. And you have to keep shoveling away layer after layer of dirt until something absolutely amazing happens, which is you find beautiful, pristine, life-affirming, thirst-quenching water. Says the Rebbe something amazing. What an incredible metaphor for a person. You see, all of us have that water of holiness which courses through our veins. We have that light of holiness, we call it the neshama, soul, which is inside each of us. We each possess this incredible capacity for good, this incredible capacity for holiness. But you know what the problem is? You know what the problem is? There's a lot of dirt. There's a lot of dirt that sits on top of my soul. There's a lot of dirt that sits on top of my light. There's a lot of dirt that sits on top of my holiness. And sometimes I say to myself, it is impossible for me to access all of that. I know it's there, but it's impossible for me to access it. So many years of mistakes, so many years of going in the wrong direction, so many misdeeds, so many transgressions, so many averos, so many things that I've done wrong in life. I've buried my holiness. Says the Rebbe, what does Yitzchak Avinu teach us? Yitzchak Avinu teaches us that if you are willing to dig, if you're willing to remove the dirt, you will find the water. If you're willing to do the hard work and to remove the dirt that sometimes sits on top of your soul, you will find your inner holiness. And the incredible part is to take this a step further. You know, some of the wells that Yitzchak Avinu dug, what happened to them? He got into fights with the Plishtim. And what did the Plishtim do? They filled them back in. Because you know, sometimes in life, you begin to dig for your water of spirituality. You begin to dig for your waters of self-identity. You begin to dig for the waters to find your soul, to find your holiness. You know, something happens that throws all of the dirt back in. It's almost like, you know, if you could remember, if you ever at the beach, or you as a kid, or if you ever see your children, you know, and they're digging, and they find water, and then what happens? A wave comes along and washes everything away. And that look of childhood disappointment. I worked so hard. Sometimes in life you dig and something happens and it throws all the dirt right back on you. And all too often in life when that happens, people stop digging. They give up. We all have dirt. We all have dirt. That dirt looks different for some of us. Some of us, that's the dirt of Avera. It's the dirt of sin. Some of it, it's the dirt of misdeeds. Others, it's the dirt of life failures, failed relationships, missteps, whatever it might be. We all have stuff that prevents us ultimately from seeing our inner beauty, our inner light, our inner holiness. And life is all about taking your shovel, getting rid of the dirt, and finding your water. Finding your water of holiness, finding your water of spirituality. Are you courageous enough to sift through the dirt and to find the real you? Says the Rebbe so beautifully. The Torah is preoccupied with wells because our forefathers had many skill sets. Their most incredible skill set is that they were well diggers. Because even the great Avos had dirt. And even the Imos had dirt. Because all of us do stuff in life that heaps dirt upon our well. But if you're courageous enough to dig through it and keep digging, you will find something beautiful inside of us. And this is a dual lesson. It's a lesson about how we look at others. This is actually where the Rebbe really goes with this. Right? That the Rebbe understands sometimes we look at people and we don't find anything redeeming inside of them. But that's only because we can't see through the layers of dirt which sit upon their well. Everyone has beautiful waters which course through their veins. Every single Jew has beautiful holiness inside of them. Some of us just have years and years like dump trucks of dirt that are just piled on top of us, which obscure any, I don't even know that there was a well there. I didn't know that there's water beneath all of this. So the Rebbe is really coming from that vantage point. But the truth is, in order to be able to see the beautiful waters of holiness in another person, the first step is, you have to be able to see the beautiful waters of holiness in yourself. the greatness of the Avos and the Imos is that they were well diggers. There are people who were courageous enough to say, you know what? I have some dirt because of the missteps and the mistakes of life, but I'm courageous enough to dig through them, to deal with them, to acknowledge them, to somehow figure out what to do with them, and go ahead and find and reconnect with my beautiful translucent waters of spirituality. And if I could find that inside of myself, if I could believe that about myself, then I could begin to see that within the others as well. And if we link this back to Perek Shira, so what do the Ma'ayonos tell us? The wellsprings tell us, Ma'ayonos Omrim, the wellsprings say, V'sharim kecholim kol ma'ayonei bach, that ultimately again, when you discover your waters, you will sing. There is nothing more exciting than digging for a well and seeing that first little spurt of water that comes up from the earth. That's true with the physical wells, and it's true with the emotional, spiritual wells as well. The wellsprings tell us, be courageous enough to dig for your water. Sometimes we look at ourselves and we don't think we're holy. We don't think we're special because all we see is all of the dirt. And the dirt is there a lot of times. Dig through the dirt. Uncover your well. Find your waters of holiness and spirituality. Drink from those waters. Fill your void with those waters. Chase away the snakes and scorpions from the void. And fill your void with those beautiful, magnificent waters that you have discovered. And if you do all of that, says the Ma'ayonos to us, we will lead a life filled with Shira. May we be Zochem Yartz Hashem to find the courage to dig through our dirt and to find our waters. And may we be Zochem Yartz Hashem to see the beautiful waters in others as well.
Thank you.